encourage him. Well, parenting is this absolute key role. And we were saying last week, you know, no one prepares you for parenting. In fact, one little girl says that she's never having kids because she hears that it takes 9 months to download. So with that kind of encouragement, you know, many of us may think, well, why on earth would we ever want children? And for those who have children, for those who have seen others with children, certainly for us for a while, we kind of thought people with kids must be absolutely loopy and mad. But actually, there's something precious and special about having your own child. And when you hold your own child in your arms, you can't beat it, can you? It's just a remarkable, amazing moment when you kind of look down and you think, whose ears are those? And whose nose is that? And all those kind of things. And you're just kind of in awe of this little child that sits in your arm. And then you kind of have that moment where you think, oh my life, we've got to look after this thing. We've got to care for it. We've got to bring it up. We've got to teach it. We've got to instruct it. Wow, no one's prepared us for this awesome task that lays before us. So we began to look at this role of child, of parenting children, and we kind of got through one or two, 3 points. And just to remind you what I said last week, firstly, the role of parenting is best shared. Best shared between a mother and a father, if possible, but also shared with grandparents and families and community, and yes, even church as well, to share that opportunity of bringing up children. And we've kind of included a whole load of people. We've included godparents and with grandparents. I kind of merged the godparents and grandparents together somehow, but we've got family members here, we've got friends here, we've got the wider church here, a shared role. Are kind of bringing up Alfie, if you want, or other children within their responsibility. And we as church need to take that responsibly. That is absolutely crucial. We make that promise at each dedication service that we stand with the parents to support them and encourage them. I encourage you to bring up your parents, bring up your children. It's been a long week, I tell you. Bring up your children while they're young. Start teaching them while they're young. And we began to talk about talking to your children. And sharing about things of life with your children. Do you love it when your children come up to you and say, Dad, Mum, I've got a question? Do you like those occasions? If you're like me, I love those occasions. But then I am a bit of a kind of a preacher, aren't I? So if anyone says to me, Joss, I have a question, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I've got an answer. I've got an answer. So when my son comes up to me and says, Dad, can I ask you a question? I'm like, oh, yeah. Make it as deep and meaningful as you want, son. Let's engage with life. Let's engage with philosophy and wisdom. Let's talk about the world and so forth. And I get really excited. So I think most dads are a bit like that, aren't they? No. Some of you have been doing this for a long time. You're thinking, actually, we know what's coming when our children say, I've got a question, so we don't want the question. But some of us are still naive enough to think, oh, great, ask me a question. Well, this son came up to his dad and he said, Dad, can I ask you a question? Dad's excited. Think, what's this question going to be? What's my answer going to be? We're going to sit and talk long and deep. And so Dad says, yeah, go on, son. Ask your question. So the son asked this question. When a doctor doctors a doctor, does the doctor doing the doctoring doctor as the doctor being doctored wants to be doctored, or does the doctor doing the doctoring doctor as he wants to doctor? I will say again. Don't you find that, children? You want to talk about the deep and meaningful things of life, and they want to talk about weird things that you've never even considered. About when a doctor doctors another doctor, and who doctors and why they doctor, and all those kind of things. That important role of sitting and speaking and talking to our children is a challenging one. But the Proverbs encourages us to do that. In fact, it encourages children to listen. And if the children are going to listen, then the parents need to speak. In Proverbs, in fact, we better do this because, yeah, there goes some Proverbs about listening. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Listen, my son, listen. Listen, son of my womb. Listen, my son, and answer the answer to my prayers. Throughout Proverbs very cleverly uses a whole load of different voices. And throughout Proverbs, you hear these different voices come in. And some of them are kind of the voices of foolishness or wickedness. So you get the wicked person or the fool. You get the adulteress, the fool that speaks into the situation. The sluggard, I like the sluggard. The sluggard is the lazy person. He's the person that takes life easy, puts his feet on the desk. Life just comes to him. The drunk is another voice that appears within Proverbs. It kind of reminded me of a Shakespeare kind of play, you know, when you get all the different characters and different people kind of speaking in and got their different voices or their different, their foolishness within the characters themselves. But also running through that is this voice of wisdom. Wisdom wants to speak. And I was thinking about that, and I think you could list a whole load of voices within our society, can't you? And actually some of those voices up there are still kind of there or thereabouts, aren't they? You know, there is the voice of the wicked, there is the voice of the adulterer, there is the voice of the fool, there is the voice of the lazy person, there is the fool, the voice of the drunk. There are all these kind of voices that run through life, aren't there? And where's our voice in the midst of all that? You see, the voice of the parent is synonymous with wisdom through Proverbs. Proverbs is encouraging the parent to speak wisdom into the life of their children. And we have that role, and that's quite a scary role, isn't it? To speak wisdom into the life of our children, that they might have knowledge and understanding, that they may be able to discern what is right and what is wrong. And we have that responsibility, and to some extent, we kind of use the words instruction of the Lord in the promises that you made earlier. And that's a tall order, isn't it? That you would instruct Alfie and Lily well through your lives, and you'd be able to say the right things that are helpful and good, and share with them about the things that are really important, because I said last week that there are many topics that we don't like to talk about. You know, we're worried. We're not sure what to say. And often we don't talk about faith. Often we don't talk about wisdom. Often we don't talk about peer pressure. And our kids are under so much peer pressure. What about media pressure? We don't talk about media pressure. We don't talk about how to speak well. These are kind of the topics that Proverbs picks up on. And we're going through all these different topics. Alcohol. Do we talk to our children about alcohol? A father decided he needed to talk to his child about alcohol, so he decided the best way to do it, if your children are like my children, he doesn't ever want to sit down and talk about it, so something visual is quite helpful. So he thought, I know what I'd do. So he did this experiment. He got his son, he said, son, let me show you, let me teach you about the evils of alcohol. So he got this experiment. He put one worm into a glass of water, and then he got another worm and put it into a glass of whiskey. The worm in the water lived, while the one in the whiskey curled up and died. And so dad turns to son, he says, all right, son, so what does that show you? Son says, well, dad, it shows that if you drink alcohol, you won't have worms. Sometimes it don't work out, does it? But actually, these topics and many more, sexual morality, how to have a good marriage, the importance of justice, the importance of caring for the poor, and so on and so on and so on. All these things are important things. And the proverb says, talk these things, speak these things into the life of your children. But it goes on. It doesn't just say talk, it also says live it out. Live it out. Robert Fulghum says this, don't worry that children never listen to you. Worry that they are always watching you. And actually the watching is far greater than the listening, isn't it? I mean, children don't listen, do they? God, a number of times you say something to your children and you think, how many times do I have to say this? And my son, bless him. Someone had a go at me last week because I've only got one son, so what can I do? I can either talk about him or the dog, really, and the dog doesn't answer back, really. So, but my son, I can say something to my son and then 5 minutes later he'll say, you never said that. And you kind of think, where have I been? For the last 5 minutes, I've been trying to say the same thing and you're just sitting there watching the telly. And then you go, what? And they don't really listen that well, do they, children? But they watch. They watch. Isn't it scary, dads, when you see your kids doing the things that you do? You know, picking up the bad habits or the bits and pieces. Actually, it's even more scary, Dan, when you're doing the things your father does, isn't it? When you see yourself Will you be coming your father? I remember Ian Sinclair spoke at our Way weekend a couple of years ago. And I remember him saying that it was bizarre because he looked along the line as we were worshipping. And I was doing something with my hands because I tend to. I'm a bit kind of, I have to do things with my hands most of the time. And my dad's exactly the same. And he said as he looked along the line, he thought, oh, my life, it's Stephen. That's my dad's name. Stephen. And I was thinking, oh, no, I'm becoming my dad. But we watch our parents, don't we? And we copy our parents. And our children watch who we are. And they copy what we are to some. They don't like to think that they are, but they do, ultimately. We still, as parents, have a huge influence over what our children become. And not just in terms of the habits and the trivial things of life. But in some of the big things in life. Do you know, if we teach our children not to be materialistic, but we are materialistic, what will they become? Materialistic. If we teach our children to be honest, but we are dishonest, what will they become? Dishonest. If we discourage them to drink but are reliant on alcohol, and as we get through the door at the end of the week, we grab for the bottle as the first thing that we do when we come through, or a can of beer, are they likely to do the same? Yeah. But if we live righteous and good lives, if we live lives that fear the Lord, then our children will see those things in our own lives. Proverbs 14, verse 27 says, whoever fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for their children it will be a refuge. Your life becomes a refuge for your children, says Proverbs. If you live your life well, it becomes a protection over them, not just while they're in your house, but beyond that, because you've taught them the things of righteousness. I love the verse in Proverbs 17, verse 6. Children's children are a crown to the aged, and parents are the pride of their children. Now, you would have expected that to be around the other way. That children are the pride of their parents, yeah? But actually, the proverb says, children's children are the crown of the aged, but parents are the pride of their children. Isn't it great when a child turns around and says, I'm proud of my mum and dad? At the age of 5, 6, 7, they might do that. At the age of 13, 14, 15, it's very unlikely. It's very unlikely that my son would come in and address you and say, my dad is great. In fact, he'd probably say, my dad is an idiot. My dad is a fool. He doesn't know what he's talking about most of the time. Because they get to that age, don't they, when they suddenly realise that their parents are not as great as they thought they were. But isn't it great when we get into our 20s and our 30s and we turn around and say, we're proud of our parents. We're proud of what our parents are and what our parents did. I want to say to you, I'm proud of my parents. I'm proud of my... Well, they gave us a fairly harsh upbringing in some ways. You know, we had a clear discipline in our family. In the early years, on a Sunday, we weren't allowed to do much at all. We weren't allowed to go out and play. We could read books as long as they were to do with the Bible. And we could play games as long as they... It was the... we used to play this game, the Bible game, which was a kind of quiz about the Bible. So it was kind of really harsh upbringing. But I loved them. And I'm proud of them. They're not like that now, actually. They're a little bit more free and a bit more liberal. But I loved them for what they were. What they stood for their principles, for their faith, for their righteousness, for their justice, for the things that were important to them. I love them dearly and I'm proud of them. Are you proud of your parents? Will your children be proud of you? Because you lived out your life before them. Believe me, your children are watching you. And it will impact them from this day onwards. Number five, that was number four, live a good example. Number five is love through discipline. Love through discipline. Ha ha. Here is the controversial bit in Proverbs. Anyone who knows Proverbs well will know that actually discipline comes up and punishment and the rod comes up in discipline in Proverbs. 16 times Proverbs encourages parents to discipline their children. I was really pleased with Lee and Vicky when I went round to see them. Because I sat on the sofa and we kind of talked about parenting and I said, how's it going and all those kind of things that you do when you do these things. And Vicky kind of admitted that they have a naughty step in their house. But she also said this: we never wanted a naughty step. I thought it was a really fascinating comment. Do you remember saying this? We never wanted a naughty step, but then we had to have a naughty step. You know, it kind of had to happen. And I thought, actually, I love that. I love the fact that parents, firstly, when they hold their children in their arms and they're little babes, and they look down and they go, and they look at them and say, "You would never need a naughty step. You were the best child ever. And I'm going to love you so much that I'm never going to have to tell you off, because my love will just ooze over you. And you will love my love and become a lovely, lovely, lovely child. And you'll be the perfect child that ever exists." I love that kind of attitude. And then that's that day when they're about 6 weeks old, isn't it? When you kind of think, actually, this child is not going to be perfect. And the naughty step is going to have to be put in place. Perhaps 6 weeks is a bit soon, but there comes that time you think, actually, every house needs the naughty step. What do I mean by that? It doesn't actually need a physical step, but every house needs discipline. Discipline is a word that we don't like. But actually, in the Proverbs, discipline is about being corrected. It's about taking on advice. It's about listening to others. It's about learning. And it is about punishment as well. It's about putting these things in place so that a child will grow to be strong in righteousness and goodness and wisdom. Let me say some things about what Proverbs says, and then I want to kind of make some suggestions about modern day punishments, if you want. Firstly, Proverbs says this: discipline is and always must be an act of love. And I'll come back to that in a moment, but that it must always be an act of love. Proverbs 3, verse 12: "The Lord disciplines those he loves." You discipline those you love. If you don't love your child, you won't discipline them. You don't care. But those who care will discipline. As a father, the son he delights in. If you delight in your son, you discipline your son. Proverbs 13, verse 14: "Whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them." So discipline is an act. It flows out of our love. You know that lovely moment when you're holding your child and you're thinking, "I want to love you forever." Well, actually, that moment means that actually there are going to be times when you will confront your child. You will correct your child, and you will put your child into the right place rather than the wrong place. Proverbs goes on and says discipline leads to a whole load of things. It leads to wisdom, knowledge, understanding, respect, honour and hope. All these things. Proverbs 12 verse 1: "Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, and whoever hates correction is stupid." Proverbs 15 verse 32: "Those who disregard discipline despise themselves, but the one who heeds correction gains understanding." Proverbs 19 verse 20: "Listen to advice and accept discipline, and at the end you will be counted among the wise." Isn't that wonderful? Do you know, if you think you've had it with discipline, think again. Look for discipline. Look for those who correct and advise you, support you, come alongside you, encourage you, but give you those words of wisdom that sometimes you don't want to hear. Because in the midst of all that, you will be counted amongst those who are wise. So discipline leads to these things. Lack of discipline leads to an opposite path or an opposite result, destiny. It leads to foolishness, poverty, shame and death, according to Proverbs. Proverbs 13 verse 18: "Whoever disregards discipline comes to poverty and shame, but whoever heeds correction is honoured." And punishment, says Proverbs, can save a life. "Do not withhold discipline from a child," says Proverbs 23. "If you punish them with a rod, they will not die. Punish them with the rod and save them from death." Now, I've got to say to you that in the time of Proverbs, corporal punishment was obviously an accepted means of punishment. There was no cultural issue with that. And that was kind of a form of punishment. In some ways, some may argue, actually, quite a good way of punishing children. It was done, it was dealt with, and everyone moved on. In the days of which we live, corporal punishment generally is not accepted. And that leaves us a challenge as parents. See, corporate punishment, and I wouldn't encourage it, but corporate punishment is something that can be done and dusted quickly. Everyone knows where they are. You do that, you get the rod. You do that, you get the rod. The rod comes down, bang, it's done. We move on. Today, it's more complex. It's more difficult, actually, because we don't have the simplicity of corporate punishment. So what? Can I just make some suggestions about punishment in the family? Firstly, can I come back to this issue of love? Punishment must always flow from love. And if it's in the heat of the moment of anger, you need to step back before you punish. My mum used to punish us, and we didn't get the rod. Well, we did actually have a rod for a while, and then she had this slipper. She would send us to our room. There would be a period of time of cooling off before the punishment was applied. And so we would sit in our room, and we knew what was coming, and Mum would be sitting somewhere else, cooling off. Because in the moment of annoyance, in the moment of frustration, in the moment of anger, actually the punishment could be far worse. But Mum had the wisdom to sit and wait and then bring that punishment in a place of love, knowing that she was believed she was doing the right thing for our own good. Punishment, I mean, I remember kind of getting so angry with Tim once and having to kind of walk away because I'd lost love. So frustrated, so annoyed. Can you get that? Punish out of love. And what that means often is actually stepping back before we get there. And knowing that day is coming or that time is coming. And actually working out a strategy of what happens when we arrive at that place. So that we know what the plan is. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. What the plan of punishment is going to be. Second thing I want to say is make sure that, and I'm not going to tell you how to punish your children. You know, for goodness sake, you go home and work it out for yourselves. But punishment, make sure the punishment fits the child. Not every punishment is the same for every child. You know, we have gradually worked out what works for our child. We know where it hurts him, not physically, but in other ways. And so we know, gradually, sometimes we have to rework it as he grows older, but you work out what works for that child. And your child may be very different from my child. Make sure the punishment fits the child. Can I also say this? Make sure the punishment fits the crime. You know, so often you get so annoyed and you say, if you do that one more time, I'm going to pack your bags, I'm going to shove you out of the house, I'm going to put you on the next flight out, and you'll be going to Africa, and that's where you're going to live for the rest of your days in a cave. And they go, yeah? Really? And have you heard yourself kind of say something really extreme? You know, the child works it out. They go, Mum says that, but she doesn't mean it. But actually, if you offer a punishment or you threaten a punishment that you will follow through, the child knows that that is the case. Extreme threats aren't believed. They aren't realistic, and actually, they're not just, are they? You know, just because the child didn't wash up doesn't mean they should go and live in Africa for the rest of their lives. Not that there's anything wrong with living in Africa. Extreme punishments can be exactly that, extreme. And the child soon learns that it won't actually happen. So make sure your punishment fits the crime and is realistic and meets that criteria of correcting the child. Plan for punishment. Work it through. Talk together about how that's going to work. Have a strategy. So when the moment comes, you know, the partner knows, the child knows what is in store. You know, I sit down with my son in the coolness of the day and say, look, son, if you continue to do this, this is what we're going to do. And actually, it is even possible to get the agreement of the child. To actually say, do you accept that? Are you happy with that? Well, I'm not happy with it, but do you think that's a fair punishment? If you do that, do you think it's a fair punishment that we put this in place? And I always make sure that he knows that I do it because I love him, that I want him to be the best person possible. I don't want him following paths that actually make him a nasty person. I want him to be a wonderful, lovely person. And it is possible, certainly later in life, to actually talk to your children and have a plan and actually have an agreement with the child of how we will approach these things. Have a strategy. Be consistent. Don't go over the top, but be consistent. You know, one day it's kind of extreme and the next day it's all kind of, oh, it doesn't really matter. That doesn't help them. Be consistent from day to day, week to week. And last thing, little hint, be together. Be together. Not just with your partners, but also sometimes you have to inform grandparents about, I mean, we have to do that with my parents a little bit, but my mum has a way of bringing up children and we don't quite share that exactly. So sometimes we have to rein her in a little and kind of say, Mum, this is how we are actually dealing with this. Sometimes you have to remind grandparents that you are the parent and they're the grandparent. And I say to my my parents and Sue's parents, you know, you're the grandparents, you're the ones that spoil the child. And we bring up the child in love and discipline. But be together, talk together about it, and make sure you support each other in that. I want to just mention one last thing as we finish this kind of parenting through the Proverbs. And the last thing is this: remember in all this, all the challenge, that you are not alone. The bottom line of teaching within Proverbs in all subjects, the foundation of everything, is to fear the Lord. What does that mean? Proverbs 1 verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We spoke about this in our first look through Proverbs. It means this, F-E-A-R. First, F stands for first. Put God first. E stands for eternal. Remember that God outlasts everything. He is before all things and is after all things. There is nothing that will outlast God. A stands for awesome. Remember, God is awesome. He is greater than all things. There is no problem, no issue, nothing that you're facing in life that God isn't greater than. And R is respect him, or reverence him if you want. Honor him, love him, give him your life, worship him. And as you do that, F-E-A-R, as you fear God, you will find that he will support you. He will strengthen you. He will bring his peace. He will comfort you. He will journey through with you. And there's no promises, there's no guarantees in Proverbs. I mean, many of the commentators say that. There's no guarantees with these Proverbs. But with God alongside you, you will be much stronger parents for the future and for your children. Our great God is our great Father. He is your support and your guide. Look to him and find strength in him alone. Let us pray together.